640 Toronto presents Think Tank. The breaking stories you care about. Facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
Let's do just that. We've got a great trio today to get through. Ladies first, Kareem Assad. You know, I don't know why, but the Premier is calling Bonnie Crombie, the Ontario Liberal, queen of the carbon tax, your queen of the weekend protest. But I feel like when you went to law school, you're like, oh, no, that's not something to put on a business card. But you're out there. You get emphatic video. You're stand your ground. I love what you do.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Joining us as well, former police chief of the city of Toronto. I love what he does, too. Yeah, and sometimes he does for me, sort of, kind of. Here's Mark Saunders. Hi, how's it going?
Great intro, Greg. Good morning.
I thought so. Yeah, I'm getting better at them. It's you know, I've only been in the business 23 years. It's hard to tell. Brad Bradford is a Toronto City Councilor for Beaches East York, and he was here in person. You didn't want to get wet today. You got soaked last day when you were here because you were wandering down to the Board of Trade to hear somebody speak. But it's a beautiful day this morning. This was the day to ride your bike to Chorus Key, Brad.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm out of town today, so that's why I'm phoning in. But we'll be back in studio next week.
Okay. Are you figuratively phoning it in, or are you literally phoning it in? We're going to know in about 20 minutes.
Yeah. No,
whether you phoned it in or not.
We're literally phoning it in today, but still lots of work to do.
You can't accuse some of your fellow counselors of phoning it in when you're phoning it in. You do get that, right?
Yeah, no, I'll let you levy those accusations.
Well, I think it's must-watch TV today. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and a handful of cabinet ministers, they're even, Karina Gould just had a baby 8-9 weeks ago, and she's got to come and testify today at this foreign interference inquiry. But all kidding aside, it is a really important issue. Someone that had your job, Mark Saunders, Bill Blair will testify, the defense minister, the public safety minister, Dominic LeBlanc. This is an interesting one because when Trudeau's testified before, I think we'd make the case his government was in a better position, riding more high in the polls, and nothing necessarily stuck to him. But when we get into the integrity of our elections, when we get into the idea that anything was ignored that alters the process, whether it altered who the prime minister was or not, is, I think, irrelevant. Any kind of interference, Mark, we need democracy here. We need to know our elections are legitimate for decades to come. So this has a lot of intrigue for people today.
Yeah, Greg, I agree with you. We do need democracy, but I'll also suggest that we live in different times right now. And I think people are starting to become more aware of what's going on behind the doors. Foreign interference, especially in during elections, has been commonplace for decades. And now, due to technology and other means of passing information on, more people are getting involved in that. And it's important for government to weigh the gravity that those actions are going to have. I honestly feel that tonight or today will be underwhelming. And here's how I think it's going to play out. I think that CSIS would have provided an intelligence report, and it's going to be a lengthy report. And then at the bottom, it's going to go, here are the caveats. Number one, if you do nothing, here are the potential direction, the way things will go. Number two, you know, have the RCMP look further. And if they do that, here's what you could potentially find out. And then number three, rescind the candidacy for that. And what you'll find is someone at a lower level made a decision because there wasn't facts. There were just gaps missing. And so erring on the side of caution, it's going to be, well, I just felt that it didn't go any further. And I think that's exactly how it will play out.
Karima, this is really tricky, too, because what we want, how this is supposed to work is there's either a prime minister or a cabinet minister or even an MP, and you hire people to kind of handle some of the traffic. But ultimately, big decisions get made by you. Big information comes to you. And we've seen a little bit of a pattern with the federal Liberal government where there's a struggle there. Something happens along the way, broken telephone. I'd use the example of Paul Bernardo last summer. I don't think many people found it plausible that Marco Menichino, then the public safety minister's office, gets informed that Paul Bernardo's moving to a medium security prison. I mean, the email's been published. It's plain of day. And the idea is a bunch of people who were in their late 20s, early 30s in his office thought, you know what, we can handle this on our own. You need to have the same amount of imagination to imagine the prime minister wasn't involved in this. How curious are you about how this goes today and the fallback from it?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, the idea of things falling through the gap simply because of the distribution of roles and who plays gatekeeper and who decides what is important enough to bump up for attention, and what just gets handled. I can only imagine the volume of information that comes through the Prime Minister's office or other MPs' desks. And so it's plausible that things like this happen. And I suppose there's an opportunity here to ensure the proper checks and balances. You know, this is what matters. This is what can slip. But at times, you won't find out until after an error has been made. And whether or not an error has been made, I guess that remains to be seen. But the interplay between unelected staffers and our elected politicians, we don't often get to see much light shed on that. So that will be interesting.
Brad Bradford, you're a current politician, obviously a city councilor, but you'd know as well, there's many people within the Liberal Party and MPs, and they may not have a news conference or come right out and say it, but they want transparency here. They say they can't become the party that pushes this stuff aside. And the idea is they don't care if a foreign entity, especially a threatening one, is interfering with our elections. We have to have some integrity to this process.
Oh, my goodness. There's nothing more important. And I think that the foundation of our democracy in this country rests on the assumption and the universal understanding that these elections are fair and transparent. The idea that, you know, China and Russia are rolling up their sleeves and trying to put their sort of finger on the scale here is deeply disturbing. So I'm glad that the MPs and the PM, Prime Minister, are testifying. I'm glad that it will be covered. I won't be tuning in, but I'm glad that these conversations are going to be taking place and that they're going to be taking place in public, because you know, Mark made the point that this has been going on for years. He's probably right. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that, though. I actually didn't realize that. It's kind of only come to the forefront, you know, over the past couple years and through the testimony. So it's really important that we understand it. The last thing I will say, you know, to Kareem's point there, this is a wake-up call for the bureaucracy, and you see it at all levels of government. The idea that, you know, perhaps this just sort of slipped by and somebody made the call. There was some gatekeeping and saying, well, these are the facts that we have, but it's not at a high enough level to sort of do anything about it. You see it at all levels of government. We need civil service to wake up and understand what that threshold needs to be for escalating these sort of issues. Not to take us off topic, but you look at the vacant home tax rollout here in the city and the fiasco with that. Like, somebody needed to realize when 120,000 letters were going out the door, we had a major problem, right? And to sort of sound the alarm bells. And it's the same thing here. This went way too far before it was brought to the attention of people in a position to do something about it. And as a result, our democracy, people don't feel as strong and confident about it, you know, at this point in time.
To your point, I think at your level of government, municipal level of government, we just saw this infamous letter get written last week by six councillors. And we saw a councillor, I think you have a lot of respect for, Lily Cheng, take her name off the letter and say things were moving too fast. We were dealing with the vacant home tax without throwing any sort of staffers under the bus. There must be moments when city councillors say, ah, you know, that's what you did. I know you were you had the best intentions, but that doesn't echo who I am. And I needed to be part of that decision process here. But I'll say this about politicians. They often don't get defended enough. They juggle a lot. And I would bet that would be the case right there.
Yeah, I mean, I was pleased that Lily reversed that position and gave everybody the context around why her name was on the original letter, and she did the right thing pulling it off. But that's right. There's a lot of stuff going on. And so it's about that balance, I suppose, of when these things get escalated. Or, you know, the other example, Paul Bernardo going into an institution where he's going to be working on his knitting, like that stuff is deeply flawed. And it's a process. It's a problem with the process. But we need some common sense in there, and that goes to the civil service and the bureaucracy as well. When you see this stuff, don't just look at the process chart or the decision tree. use some common sense and think about these things and make sure that we're escalating them appropriately.
Mark, I know you and I have talked about school boards before. This is an interesting one this morning. I don't think it's necessarily a thorny issue, but it's an issue, clearly. Not everybody's going to agree on. Toronto's Catholic board has a trustee, Mike Del Grande, who will debate and put a motion forward at an April 23rd meeting to fly the, quote, international pro-life flag outside their schools during the month of May. The also ask is to encourage staff and students to go to Ottawa and be part of an annual anti-abortion march. Listen, 10 people can get in the room. They all might have wide variances of a woman's right to choose and pro-choice, pro-life. They might. But this gets into, to me, really tricky territory here with what if a student goes? What if a student doesn't go? I'm just not sure we talked about this with protests about the Middle East in October and students leaving school time to participate. And that's not really what schools or boards are meant to do, is encourage activism one way or the other, is it?
Yeah. You know, and this causes a debate as to why there's an increase of people wanting homeschooling. Listen, I had a look at that, and this is a personal issue. It is a person from the board making this, and there's a bit of a backdrop to his reasons for doing it, and I can understand that. But I'll always measure, if it's not satisfying the student's best interest first, then I discard it. You know, the world is getting tricky right now, and we want our Canadian young men and women and others to have an equal opportunity in that world of work. And when we talk about science, technology, engineering and math and all those other things that schools are supposed to be making their priority. And yes, social justice does play a role, too, because that is incorporated in the lives we live. But striking that balance is key and critical. And when you go right off the grid, like in this particular case here, I don't think it'll warrant enough gravity to have much of a discussion that'll last the rest of this week, to be honest with you, Greg.
Karima, it gets into that troublesome territory. It is law that every school flies the national flag of Canada, which makes sense, and the provincial flag of Ontario. But there are months in which one flag goes up, another flag comes down. There are some people that want it simple and say, why does your cause mean more than my cause does? And why are you flying this flag and not the other flag? I understand their points.
Yeah. And, you know, I have attended protests and demonstrations outside of school boards over flags and have come to the conclusion that we should be very, very cautious about using schools as a battleground for political grandstanding, and that the intentionality behind flying a particular flag to demonstrate support for a cause, you know, good intentions can cause problematic results at times. And so I think that there is something to the idea of restricting flags, the use of flags to our national flag, the provincial flag, and leaving it there. And there are other ways to express, because the way that this is polarizing, I think ultimately causes damage to community and the fabric of people, how they interact with one another.
Brad, it's very much damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I'm looking at some school boards, even I won't mention the one I'm looking at right now. They've had to put in legislation to get a second flagpole because the national flag of Canada has to be displayed on one side and not the other. It can't be lower than the other flag that flies. We get into an awful lot of complications here. The city, you know, you got to attend a lot of things that are important that make it the fabric of a very cosmopolitan society. But I don't know whether schools should be treated the same way as municipalities in this context.
It's a really interesting point, and Kareem kind of hit the nail on the head there. The purpose of the institution, they have to fly the Canadian flag, but you know, when you're putting in budget requests for second flag poles so that it can be a, you know, pardon the pun, flag waving sort of advocacy piece, I don't know if that's the best use of resources. I don't know if that's the best use of time. And I'm not sure if that's what the expectation is in our public school systems. And this motion, which clearly is very politically motivated, is divisive. I don't think it's helpful. Everyone's entitled to their personal views. And Del Grande has voiced those over the years. And to a degree. That's his job as an elected official. But I think it is ultimately much more political and divisive rather than bringing people together. And quite frankly, to be honest, if this was passed, I think it would be the sort of thing that a lot of people would call into question. Why is the Catholic school board still getting public funding? You know, like we're one of the last remaining provinces where that is the case, where you have a separate school board that is faith-based, religious-based. And these are the types of moments where people say, well, that's not necessarily the right way to go. And when you're putting dollars into a faith-based school that are coming from the public coffers, the positions need to be really universal. And I think it's dangerous, and this pushes us in the wrong direction.
All right, let me come to this story. Toronto police investigating after swastikas were drawn on posters of kids who were kidnapped by Hamas. It's the grossest thing imaginable. We can say this is not who we are, but we're 7 months in, and some people who live amongst us, it is who they are. Mark Saunders, I may as well start with you. I should. You're a former Toronto police chief. How difficult is it to see things like this in the city? This is a whole different atmosphere, whether we've been complimentary or critical of police or of the police chief. I think we can concur. This is something, a level of vitriol and conflict you never had to deal with as a Toronto police chief. How frustrating is this to watch this? And it is really difficult to police, isn't it? To be at every park, every public overpass, every wall, every business all at once.
Well, no, you know, I had to deal with it, but not with this intensity or not with the amount of divisiveness that's happening right now due to what's going on. But I can tell you this, speaking with victims, it has such a strong psychological effect on people and on communities. And that's the unfortunate piece, that here we are in Toronto and people can feel so devastated just by words or actions or posters. And yet we see that. And the other thing, Greg, it is one of the highest unreported crimes right now. Mm-hmm. So with the new program that the TPS is putting out, working in conjunction with Crime Stoppers, the education piece, I hope it has some gravity and helps from one, the behavioral, so that people will stop doing it if they understand the impact and gravity that it does have. And number two, the fact that people will see that it does have impact, and if they see a crime being committed, then they'll report it to the police in order to have the necessary outcomes with regards to understanding hate crime and the gravity that it does cause.
Before I get back around to Kareem and Brett, it's my first chance to ask you about the fallout from the letter from the city councilors, the lack of reaction. John Reed from the Toronto Police Association's referenced the lack of response or lack of a conversation, even via text or on the phone, from the mayor, Olivia Chow. These are concerning times. We don't all have to agree all the time, but we got to be on the same page about supporting law enforcement and supporting people's rights to protest, don't we?
Yeah, listen, and I've said this over and over, Greg, you know, the police do not want to be the story. They want to make sure that peaceful on all sides at all times, and they do their best to stay neutral. You know, lawful protests are fine. When it's unlawful, then they have to take action. And so when we have people in authority that say these things, they don't understand the gravity that it has to the frontline men and women that are out there. And that is unfair for a job that is tough enough on a good day. And, you know, when we start seeing the different types of offenses happening right now, when words matter is when you start to peel away and either not make them human or put them at a lower level of status, then it becomes open season for other people who might interpret people in authority giving a green light to say, you know what, don't worry about them, dismiss them. So my ask is that people understand the gravity of when you try to light them up in a negative way. It's they're reacting, and when you have a protest that is unlawful, then things need to happen and people do need to be apprehended so that the greater good, and 99% of people protesting are law-abiding. It is that 1% that always makes the news, and there lies a lot of moving parts to the problem.
I want to get to Brad and the legislation he wants to enact, but Karima, like beyond the posters themselves, you saw an awful lot of conflict on Sunday, especially given it was the six-month anniversary, pro-Israel demonstrators wanting to bring the hostages back. And just even on that one day, some pro-Palestinian protesters couldn't give them their moment, couldn't give them their space, and there was conflict and terrible things shouted, certainly provocationally from one group to the other. I don't doubt some pro-Israel members responded, but you saw a lot of ugliness on Sunday, didn't you?
There's a lot of ugliness, a lot on the streets, actually. To Mr. Saunders' point, the 1% is often the same 1% throughout protests who are instigating or looking to react to a fight. So there's something to be said about that as well. On Sunday, in particular, you're right that there were some pretty horrific things being yelled. But on the whole, I would say that the pro-Palestine demonstrators, they were essentially sequestered into an area of Nathan Phillips Square. For the most part, people stayed behind the barrier. And, you know, there wasn't conflict as such, where which was seen in other venues and other places. So it's tough because we're in this mindset of, on the one hand, people overreacting, and on the other hand, downplaying the impact of their own words and wanting to have it both ways. And you can't. We have to be empathetic.
Brad, I got a minute here, but you're getting a lot of credit from a lot of different sides for putting forth legislation to protect Toronto's religious and cultural spaces. Stephen Del Duca, I give him full credit. The mayor of Vaughan did exactly the same thing and said, listen, we're going to allow peaceful protest, but we've got to have some safe spaces. And where you pray, depending on your religion, is important. You approached Doug Downey, Ontario's Attorney General, about this to introduce legislation about a month ago. I just wanted to get an update in about 45 seconds I've got as to whether that conversation is going anywhere meaningful.
Well, I'm hopeful that the conversation can go somewhere meaningful. I've reached out to his office, obviously, with the letter, and spoke with some folks in the provincial government.
Have you talked to Doug?
The premier?
No, Doug Downey. That's true. It could be either Doug.
With Doug. No, I haven't. No, not personally. But I believe he's aware of it. And okay. I've talked to some folks in the government. And look, they're seeing the same thing that we're all seeing. And it seems like a common sense approach to me. People are feeling threatened by going to their synagogue, to their temple, to their daycare, to the community center. The swastika on the faces of the hostages, the posters in the park yesterday is another glaring example. Mm-hmm. People do not feel safe in the city of Toronto, safe to practice their religion, to go to their places of worship, and it's getting worse. And you know, it's frustrating for me to see the lack of urgency and action at the city of Toronto. On this issue, we ought to be doing more. This has to be priority number one, because if you don't feel safe in the city, everything else starts to fall away. I was thrilled, frankly, that Sija and leaders from the Hindu community, Christian leaders, representatives from a number of other cultural and
religious they signed on. Yeah.
They signed on to it. And so I think the province is going to see this is about collective action. It's about taking care of everybody. And it's about calling out what's happening right now and turning the page.
All right. I got a blast. Thanks very much, you three.
Thanks, folks.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.